Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now, your ideas don't have to wait. Now, they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey there, guys. It's Jonathan. This is Tech Stuff. It's time for another classic episode. Yes, indeed, we are still getting everything ready to go with our new studio. I'm recording this in our old studio, so I'm just guessing that that's true. At any rate, I wanted to talk about a classic episode, Tech Stuff Withdraws from the ATM. This one has my old buddy Chris Paulette as the co-host in this episode, and we talk all about what ATMs are, and I think I say ATM machine and PIN number about a billion times. Enjoy! Talking about ATMs today.
Yes.
And we've had a few people ask us about how ATMs work. We assume it was all on the up and up. Not to find out how they work so that you can exploit them.
Well, I did find out an article about how to hack into one.
Wow. Well, and that gets a little complicated. We'll talk about that, why that is in the case.
Yeah, because it
really does depend. Mm-hmm. But first, let's talk about how ATMs came to be.
Okay, that's somewhat in dispute.
Yes. There are multiple people who were inventing things that resemble what ATMs are today in different parts of the world around the same time. Mm-hmm. Although the earliest one I could find was from a Mr. Luther Simgian.
Yes.
Who was born in Turkey. He was the son of Armenians who were, sadly, his family was broken up during a genocide in mm-hmm. the early 20th century.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And he eventually immigrated to the United States. And he came up with an idea that eventually he called the Bankmatic Automated Teller Machine. So that's where we get ATM. Mm-hmm. He's the one who came up with the term. And this was around 1939. Mm-hmm. But this was – it doesn't really resemble the way ATMs look and act now.
Yeah.
But it was an idea of a machine that would dispense money. And it was run for a six-month trial. Mm-hmm. At the City Bank of New York, which we now call
Citibank.
Yes.
After the 6 months, the trial ended, and Citibank decided not to extend the trial, not to implement it. And at least according to one source I read, the reason behind it was that it just didn't get a lot of traction. People just didn't want to use a machine to interact with their bank accounts. They preferred to have a person-to-person interaction in a bank. And apparently the people who were using it were a bunch of ne'er-do-wells.
Yeah, I read about that too.
Yeah,
basically, they the idea being that the only people who would not want to talk to a teller are the people who would prefer that you didn't know they were depositing or withdrawing money in the first place.
Yeah, so we're talking about
people with ill-gotten gains.
Yeah, gamblers, for example.
Oh, that would be a good example.
In places where gambling was not legal. And, you might not want to have to answer tricky questions like, how did you come upon this sum of money, my good man?
Yes, yes, exactly.
Anyway, that was the first recorded incidents I could find of someone trying to create an ATM.
Yes.
And again, it was an interesting experiment that ultimately failed at that time.
Yeah. Now, a lot of what I read about the early days of ATMs, they weren't ATMs. They didn't function like today's machines
No.
do. In some cases, you needed a special card that wasn't actually tied to your bank account. In fact, a lot of them used credit cards
Yeah.
instead. For a long time, credit cards were looked down upon.
Yeah. Some of them used special vouchers or coins.
Yes.
Token.
Yeah. In Britain, you had to, on one of the early trials, you had to go inside and get a voucher. You would get a 10-pound voucher. So if you wanted 50 pounds, you'd have to get 5 vouchers that you'd take outside of the machine.
Which raises the question, why would you not just go and withdraw the money directly while you're there? Unless, of course, you just wanted the convenience of being able to get at 10 pounds at any given time in the future. And I guess that's the argument you'd have to make. Like, instead of walking out of the bank with 50 pounds, which, you know, you may or may not need at that time, you could have 5 10-pound vouchers and then as you go about your business throughout the coming days, you realize, oh, I need some more walking around money or gadding about money, as I like to say. You would go and use one of those vouchers to get some more money out. But it did seem to decrease the convenience factor of the automated teller machine somewhat. But yeah, in this case, you wouldn't need a card with stuff encoded on it. You would just need your voucher to put in and then it would spit money out. It became like a money vending machine.
Yeah, yeah. In 1968 in Britain, there was several banks used a device that would use a card.
Yeah.
But not a card that you always carried with you. It basically worked like the voucher. You'd stick the card in the machine, you'd get your money out, and the machine would keep your card, which is kind of a pain in the neck.
Yeah, it's kind of what happens to you now when your machine eats your card.
I've had that happen.
Yeah, I've had that happen too. That is not a good feeling, is it?
No.
Yeah, except this time, in this case, we're talking about it doing it on purpose. So some of the other players in this space, and this mainly the real development of ATMs beyond the early 1939 example, took place in the 60s.
Yes.
So you had people like James Goodfellow, who secured a patent on an ATM-like machine in 1966. He also came up with the idea of storing a personal identification number on a magnetic strip that would be printed on the back of a card.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that would become the ATM card eventually. They had also John D. White, who mm-hmm. invented a freestanding automated teller machine. A lot of these other machines were built into the corner of a building. It was actually part of a larger structure. This was more of a freestanding a machine. And then there's John Shepherd Barron, who I think most sources I saw credited him as the true father of the ATM.
Really?
Yeah, John Shepherd Barron, because he was the guy who created the first real fully electronic automated teller machine. The very first one was installed in Barclays Bank in London in 1967.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But you also had Don Wetzel.
You were going to say him.
Now, he was working in America, and his machine started coming out around 1968, and he was known to have worked, at least in part, on Shepherd Barron's work as well. He kind of took Shepherd Barron's work and then change things, like enhance things and drop some things and included other things. So Sora used it as a launching point for his own work. So you get a lot of conflicting information about who is really the inventor of the ATM. I think part of it depends on where you're from. If you're from England, then it's John Shepherd Barron.
Yeah, in 1995, the National Museum of American History, the Smithsonian, recognized Wetzel and his company DocuTel, which was a baggage handling company, as the people who created the ATM. So it's...
Yeah, I guess, like I said, it all depends on who you ask. Sort of like television.
Yeah.
Or radio.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there, like many other inventions, there's the real story is far more complicated than just a factoid that you'll find in a history book.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, now, even though in the 60s, ATMs became a lot more common, banks started including them as part of their services. As a matter of fact, the Fortune article I read by Ellen Florian and Doris Burke and Jenny Miro basically was saying that they quoted a chemical bank advertisement that said, on September 2nd, our bank will open at 9 o'clock and will never close again.
Yeah.
And that was the Rockville Center branch at 10 North Village Avenue on Long Island.
Yeah. The idea being that, of course, you could access your account at any time and make withdrawals or transfers or whatever without having to go into the bank. Because, of course, the reason why people were coming up with this in the first place was for convenience, because bank hours are notoriously short.
Yeah. people talk about banker's hours.
Yeah. Where, you know, in order to actually go and visit the bank, you might have to take time out of your work day.
Yeah.
In order to, you know, and then you have to go inside a bank and stand in line. See, for some of our listeners, this is going to sound completely foreign to them.
Yeah.
Because apart from maybe opening up a bank account or perhaps going in for a loan or something like that, you just don't have to do that anymore.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to do the day-to-day stuff, depositing a check, finding out how much money you have in the bank, making withdrawal, maybe even transferring money between accounts, you can do all that in an ATM.
Yeah. In some cases, you can do some of that through online banking as well. So,
well, sure.
You know, we've almost completely eliminated the need to go into a physical space.
Yes.
But back in the day, it used to be that if you wanted to do anything to do with your money, you had to go and stand in line and wait to talk to a teller, and then they'd pull up your records and you'd, you know, do all that in person, face to face. And actually, in the 60s, back when these were launching, again, the people weren't flocking to them immediately. In fact, some banks were a little skeptical that people would ever want to interact with a machine as opposed to a human. They thought that the human interaction was a key component of the banking process.
Yeah.
And it really wasn't until the 80s that ATMs started to truly take off.
Well, the Fortune article actually has a particular event that they credit with the takeoff of the ATM.
And what might that be?
Well, as it turns out, it took Mother Nature's involvement to spur people to use the ATM, according to them.
It's not nice to fool Mother Nature.
No. We know what side of the bread you're buttered. Never mind.
All right, go ahead.
Anyway, in January 1978, in New York, they got 17 inches of snow, which slowed business to a crawl because a lot of places couldn't open.
Yep.
And they said, again, this is citing the Fortune article, there was a commercial that Citibank released saying, you know, hey, you can use these machines anytime, whether the bank's open or not. And they had a new tagline, the city never sleeps.
Nice.
CITI.
Nice. Yeah.
And it said,
I see what they did there.
The machine's use increased 20% during the storm. And by 1981, Citibank's market share in New York City, deposits had doubled. And so the rest of the banks moved to catch up. And that basically started a revolution, at least in New York. Of course, that's a lot of people. So that can affect things. And people go in there and see how people are using the ATMs, and they go back home, you know.
Yep. Yeah. And like I said, in the 80s, it really started to take off. So I guess now we can finally start getting into what makes up an ATM and how they actually work.
Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now, your ideas don't have to wait. Now, they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
This is Amy Brown from Four Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
Now, part of this involves the way that we access the ATMs, and not just with the keypad or the touch screen, depending upon the model that you're using, but the card you have, your ATM card, whatever you're using to access the ATM. And there are variations on this, but all of them have a magnetic stripe or mag stripe on them. And, you might say, well, what the heck is a magnetic stripe? Well, it's kind of what it sounds like. It's a plastic-like film that's on the back of your card that has lots and lots and lots of tiny iron-based magnetic particles.
Yes. As a matter of fact, it's very similar, if not nearly identical, to the material that they used to use in recording tape.
Yeah, cassette tapes.
Cassette tapes, reel-to-reel tapes, 8-track tapes. Also, floppy disks.
Yeah, yeah.
The material inside there. I mean, it's even most of them are even the same brownish color.
Right. And the way you write to this strip is that you magnetize these little particles. Each of the particles acts like its own bar magnet.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And you magnetize them to either have a north or south pole direction on each particle. And so that's like bits. Zeros and ones.
Mm-hmm.
So by creating them in either a north or south pole direction, and then you've got thousands of these, right, in one strip, you can encode information that way. And that information is going to have things like the account number on it so that it has, you know, it's able to say this card belongs to this account.
Mm-hmm.
It may also have the PIN on there, the personal identification number.
Right.
So that you can have that as sort of a key pass entry. You know, as long as the PIN that you enter into the ATM matches the one that's on the card and in the account, as long as all three of those are the same, then you'll be able to access your information. Mm-hmm. So that's on your card, which means, of course, that the ATM has to have some sort of card reader involved, which, you know, it's a magnetic stripe reader that, you know, depending on the style of the ATM, it may be one where you put your card in and it sucks it into the machine and you hope when your transaction's over, it'll spit it back out again.
Mm-hmm.
Or what I see most commonly now are the kinds where you swipe it. You either have a vertical swipe where you just swipe the card down the side of a little reader, or you insert it into a slot and pull it back out again quickly.
Yeah.
And in either case, what happens is those little magnets go past a detector.
Mm-hmm.
And because the magnets are in motion, the detector detects the difference of the magnetism on each of those little bars and can read that as whatever the information is.
Yeah. So all the information that's printed on the card, the number that's embossed in the card and your name, the machine is not reading or looking at any of that stuff. It's taking everything from the magnetic stripe.
Which is why you should not put your credit cards or ATMs cards or anything like that near powerful magnets.
Right.
Because that could actually realign those little magnetic particles inside the film. Some people call it demagnetizing, but really it's just realigning those poles. So it might spout out gibberish now when you swipe it. Or anyway, it's not going to correspond with your information, and suddenly your card doesn't work anymore.
Yeah. You can also find the same thing if you've used it too much or if the magnetic stripe gets damaged in some way.
Or dirty.
You know, some people say that eel skin wallets.
Yeah, I hear that a lot because, you know, and there are a lot of different theories about, actually the theory I've heard that seems to explain it the most, or it seems to be the most logical to me, eel skin wallets, some people claim came from electric eels and that it somehow has some sort of electric impulse still stored in it. And that's what's screwing up the cards.
Count me skeptical on that one.
Exactly. But a lot of these have a magnetic clasp.
Yes.
So that when you close it, it remains closed. And the magnetic clasp, depending on how your card is, how you're storing your card in the wallet, the stripe might be close enough to the magnetic clasp that the magnetic clasp is realigning those magnetic particles in the film.
Mm-hmm.
So don't do that.
Well, yeah. So once that, you have the magnetic card reader. We've talked about that. And basically the information is going into a computer.
Yeah. There's a very basic CPU inside every ATM.
And in fact, a lot of them run Windows.
Yeah. Yeah. Which we'll get to. The earlier ATMs were all proprietary.
Oh, yeah. Now, that was when if you had an account with bank something, you know, First National Bank, and you wanted to go to Second National Bank, you were on your own.
Yeah.
You have to find an ATM with First National Bank or you are out of luck.
Yeah, because your card wouldn't work. The system wasn't compatible. However, it also meant that those ATMs had the benefit of security through obscurity.
That's true.
Because a would-be thief would have to focus on a particular type of ATM.
Mm-hmm.
And the things that might work on that ATM would not necessarily work on ATMs for other banks.
Yeah.
So it somewhat limited the liability and the vulnerability of those machines. Once the machines started to move toward more computer-based operating systems like Linux and Windows, then you opened up new opportunities for thieves to target specific parts of the ATM infrastructure and made it, in some ways, more vulnerable than the older models. Now, I say that, but the truth is you can actually find these older model ATMs on plenty of sites like eBay, where you could buy an ATM if you wanted to. And if your goal was to deconstruct, to hack this ATM so you would learn how it works, you could potentially find vulnerabilities in that system to exploit. Don't do that. It's illegal. You don't want to do that. But that is one of the downsides to the old systems too, is that, you know, it's not like these things were, it's not like you had to have a license to own one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just had to buy one.
Yeah.
So you just had to find someone willing to sell one and then you could buy it. So, but yes, you've got your CPU in there. However, the ATM is not its own standalone, machine. Like it's not that it's disconnected from the outside world.
No, but if you think about it, it's very much like the computer that sits on your desktop or laptop. So you've got a screen for a customer, for basically as an output device.
Yep.
You've got a printer that prints out your receipts.
Yep.
You've got an input device, or maybe two. You might have a touch screen. You might have a keypad.
Yeah.
To type in numbers, or both.
Mm-hmm.
And
hopefully both for those of people who have vision impairments.
Right. Right. And then you also have basically an internet connection. It may be on a private network.
Yeah, it might
of
be
some kind.
Yeah, it might be a closed off private connection, but it goes to a whatever bank is behind that particular ATM.
Yeah, it'll have a network connection of some type to communicate with a server somewhere that has account information on it.
Yeah.
So if you have $300 in your account and you want to withdraw $20, it will say, okay, well, Jonathan's got $300, so I can give him $20. And he's withdrawn $20, so it makes a note of that in the account. So it says now he has $280 left.
Yeah. Yeah, the way this works is that, so you could think of the, especially the older ATMs, were really thin clients.
Yeah, they were.
They were, you know, it had essentially enough power for it to read the strip to allow you to input your PIN and to display the information. But then what it would do is the terminal that you're using would connect to a host processor.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this would be a computer that belongs to whatever financial institution, again, owns that ATM.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if that's your bank, then that's pretty much where this ends. It refers to your account. It confirms that you are who you say you are, and that, at least according to your PIN, and that you have the funds that you require in order for you to get whatever it is you're asking. So, again, like in your example, that you have at least $20 you can withdraw.
Right.
And then it'll send the information back to the machine that you're at and either confirm that it can dispense the cash or deny it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the machine does whatever it's supposed to do. If your bank is a different bank, then what happens is it'll go to the host processor. The host processor will then route that request to the specific financial institution that you belong to and get the permission there. And then your bank essentially will wirelessly transfer funds to the financial institution in charge of that ATM. And then that financial institution will allow the ATM to dispense cash because the money has been, you know, it's not losing money. It's had the wireless transfer from your bank. This is also why you'll find a lot of ATMs have those fees on them.
Yes.
The usage fees, because otherwise, you know, it's just an access thing that, you know, banks are doing out of the goodness out of their hearts. But these are bankers. Mm-hmm. We know they don't have that. Right?
Oh.
Bankers and lawyers, right?
Oh, man.
So, hey, I watched the documentary A Christmas Carol. I know how this works. So in order to make money off of these transactions, that's why you have that usage fee, because, you know, it's going to charge you for the whole process of having the money transferred from your financial institution to the bank. And depending upon the way that the different financial institutions operate, you might actually have multiple fees on one transaction, which is really irritating.
Yeah, that's when you get the fee from the Second National Bank from using its ATM, and then the fee from the First National Bank
for wirelessly transferring the money to Second National Bank.
You should have used our ATM.
Yeah, that's terrible. However, one of the bright sides of using ATMs is that if you're in a foreign country and you're using your card, it's automatically making the
exchange,
and it usually makes that exchange at a, like, you know, normally if you go into a financial institution to exchange currency from one format to another, there's a fee placed on top of that. So, yes. So you're not going to get a perfect exchange from whatever currency you're using to whatever you need. You're going to have some of that money taken out. But usually if you're using an ATM in a foreign country, you tend to get you normally get a really favorable rate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it won't be as dramatic as it would be if you were to go into some money changing place. Anyway, getting off topic here.
Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now, your ideas don't have to wait. Now, they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
This is Amy Brown from Four Things with Amy Brown. Today, Healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that Healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
So, that's the process going on behind the scenes. Now, when the money's actually coming out, how does the ATM know that it's giving you the right amount of money?
Well, it has to, basically it has cassettes in there with the different bills. So assuming that things are lined up correctly.
Yeah, assuming that the person who's loaded the ATM has done so in the proper way.
Then it should be dispensing the right number of bills. Now, it also goes by thickness.
Yeah.
So it should be able to tell if you are getting, say, two bills out.
Right.
Let's say two 20s, you want $40. Then it should be able to go, okay, there are two. Because I can tell by the thickness of these bills.
Yeah. So yeah, you've got a couple of different types of sensors inside the ATM. There's usually an electrical eye sensor, some sort of optical sensor that is optically verifying that the denominations that are being dispensed match what you asked for.
Yes.
And then there's also the thickness sensor, so that if it's supposed to be doing it one bill at a time and the thickness sensor says, wait a minute, that's too thick for it to be one bill.
Right.
It will send that particular bill or pair of bills or whatever it happens to be to a reject bin inside the ATM. So the ATM has a bin that collects rejects. And this can also be bills that are worn or torn.
Yes.
If it detects that, then it's going to send it to the reject bin. And so the bin's just going to keep collecting bills that get rejected through this process. And it's all taking just a few seconds. So, you know, you might be waiting a little bit, but thinking like, whatever. Well, meanwhile, the machine is making sure that it's dispensing the right number and denomination of bills to you.
Yeah.
There's also an electronic journal that's part of an ATM, so that it's recording every transaction that's happening with that machine. And it also records whenever any bill gets sent to the reject bin. Mm-hmm. And that way, when someone comes in to service the machine, either to refill it or to fix it or whatever, they can take a look at the journal and see, how frequently is the reject bin getting a bill sent to it. And if it's happening a lot, that might mean that either the sensors need to be adjusted, mm-hmm. or that the feeding mechanism needs to be adjusted so that it's no longer pulling more than one bill at a time. Or it might mean that the actual bills that are being put into the machine are they're not fresh enough. Mm-hmm. That something needs to change.
This one's a little stale.
Yeah, exactly. Because too many of them are going into the reject bin.
Right. So it's got built-in error correction, if you will.
Yeah. And some of that, again, is mechanical, and some of it's just saying, hey, stop putting crappy money in me because I can't give it to anyone.
Right.
And the bank's like, but we don't want to give money to anyone.
Yes, I know.
And then they twirl their mustaches and leap into a giant vault full of gold coins, which, by the way, hurts.
Yeah, I don't know how Scrooge McDuck did it.
No, man. I scratched that one off my bucket list, and then I also broke an arm. So I do not recommend it.
However, if you invest tuppence. Anyway,
Fat birds.
it is basically a computer with a couple special sophisticated ways to handle error correction. Oh, and I also wanted to mention that the journal sort of serves two purposes. One, it helps keep track of what's going on with the machine so that you could see the machine's working correctly. Also, it provides an accounting in case there's ever any dispute about what the machine was dispensing or whether there was a question about how the machine was used. And of course now, ATMs also usually have some kind of security camera nearby. To watch that people are who they say they are.
Yeah, so you can match up the time on the security camera with the time that was listed in the journal and mm-hmm. go back and review footage. Mm-hmm. If any of you out there have ever had your card number and PIN stolen so that someone else has accessed your account through an ATM, you realize, of course, this would be a really important feature. I'm one of those people, by the way.
Yeah. Well, that's actually
but my bank was very good at letting me know mm-hmm. and was very proactive in making sure that that got fixed. So,
yep. Now that's true. These machines are sophisticated and specialized, but they're also in some ways not so sophisticated that they can't be fooled.
Yeah.
Or not necessarily fooled, but also that other people can come along and take information by using devices such as skimmers.
Yeah.
Which can be put over the card reader. And basically it is usually a very slim, compact device that can read the magnetic strip on there, on the card. So basically what happens is if a scammer has installed a skimmer on an ATM, when you put your card through it, both the skimmer and the ATM are reading the card number.
Yeah.
Now, the PIN block, in the United States, federal regulations require that the PIN block, which is the four-digit PIN information, must be encrypted when it's sent along.
Right.
So to some degree, you would be protected if just your number was going through the skimmer because you would need the PIN block encrypted. And it's encrypted on the card. So it can't, the machine has to decipher that. The skimmer can't do that. So what the scammers do, they will install a very tiny camera. You know, cameras are teeny tiny these days.
Yeah.
You know, we've got them in our smartphones and other types of phones. They're sitting on top of our laptops and computers because they're so small. People can install a small camera right above the area where you type in your number.
And then they'll record your keypad punches. And then what they'll do is they'll match the keypad punch to the information that they've skimmed off your card. And then they've got essentially your card number and your PIN all in one place and can then access money from your account at any ATM.
In a lot of cases, too, they don't try to take as much as they can get. A lot of cases, banks that I know of here in the United States will give you a maximum amount a day, usually something like $300 per day. A lot of times these scammers won't do that. They'll take out $20.
Yeah, and because the idea being that it'd be harder to detect.
Yeah. I must have taken out. I don't remember what that was, but it wasn't that much. It wasn't like somebody was scamming me.
Yeah. Although this, by the way, is why it's important for you to review your bank statements on a regular basis. Because you may notice that you're withdrawing money from places that you are not physically at.
Yeah.
Like Los Angeles or something when you're not in LA. If you're in LA and you see that you've withdrawn from LA, you may very well have been the person to have done that. I don't mean to say that any withdrawal from LA is obviously fraudulent.
Right. Everything's haunted.
Does this mean I have to drive to San Jose if I want to withdraw money? Yes, that is what I meant.
There are some people working on newer types of verification technology.
Yeah.
I saw one they're trying out in Poland, which is using biometrics. They do a scan of your finger, and they don't use your fingerprint. They're looking at the veins in your finger.
Which is pretty smart because, again, fingerprints, you can lift a fingerprint and you can fake fingerprint readers. The more sophisticated the detection device, the less likely someone's going to go through all the trouble to fool it, because it is a lot of, I mean, it takes a lot of investment just to get the stuff to be able to fool these devices. But yeah, if you want to, you know, fingerprint is not foolproof because you could lift a print off of something and then create a latex print and fool some machines using that. We've seen that happen before. There's also, I know you mentioned the cameras, but we should also mention some skimmers will also use a fake keypad.
Yes, that's true. Or an overlay.
Yeah, which is essentially a key logger that's logging pin entries. So if you ever walk up to an ATM and it looks like parts of the machine don't match up exactly, like it's just a different coloration or made out of a different material and it just looks a little odd, that's a warning sign.
Yeah.
Doesn't necessarily mean that a skimmer has hit that machine. It may just be that that particular machine was manufactured in an odd way. But anything that looks a little out of place should be a big red flag to you. And I would highly recommend that if you do notice something when you walk up to an ATM that's like that, that you find a different one. Don't use that one.
Yeah, and keep in mind where it is, too. The more isolated ATMs are more likely to be the ones that scammers are going to target because they'll be easier to modify.
Yeah, because this stuff takes a little bit of time and effort, and if you're doing it in a high traffic area, someone's going to notice.
Yeah, like for example, the ATMs that you might see in a popular gas station are a whole lot more likely to be okay because if a cashier is standing right across from it all day long, it's unlikely that a scammer is going to have the time to install those devices without getting caught doing it. Hey, what are you doing?
Or something like a busy airport.
Yeah.
Where there's
a
lot of security already there. I mean, it would be such a high risk endeavor that it would, you look at risk versus reward from a thief standpoint.
Yeah.
It'd be less likely to be hit. That's not saying that some enterprising thief hasn't tried it.
Nope.
But it's less likely.
Yeah. Well, in fact, we had a rash here in, the Atlanta area not terribly long ago where people were knocking over ATMs with their cars and just taking the ATM.
Or forklifts or bulldozers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's easier to crowbar your way into one than bother trying to
because we didn't mention that
decode the software.
Part of the ATM is it's a safe.
Yeah.
There's a safe that's inside these machines. That's where all the money is kept, in a vault, in a safe, in the machine. So if you were to take the whole machine, you're taking the vault. Now, Before any of you say, hey, I'm going to go on a life of crime and start knocking over ATM machines. ATMs.
Oh.
I told you at the beginning of the show that it was going to happen. I caught myself, but I told you it was going to happen. A lot of these have, things inside the vault that if stuff goes wrong.
Yeah.
It will ruin the money inside there. Like essentially little explosive charges usually. Mm. Some of them have, explosive charges full of gas, so that if a thief is trying to use a gas explosion to open the vault, that it actually has gas that counteracts the explosive gas, rendering it inert. So in that case, it's not necessarily destroying the money inside. It's just trying to destroy the methodology that the thief is using to get the vault open. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's some other tech involved here that's kind of interesting. Now, I use ATMs. I mean, I try to be careful about it, and I try to keep a good eye on making sure that whatever device I'm using looks, you know, totally legit and everything. So I'm not saying that ATMs are so dangerous that no one should use them, but it does bear repeating that you should be vigilant and pay attention when you come up to an ATM. Don't just, you know, walk up and ignore all safety, especially, you know, not just the machine itself, but, you know, it's always good to take a quick look around you to make sure you're not going to be mugged. I've never been mugged. I don't want it to happen. I'm going to try and keep that streak going. But yeah, that's one of those things is that, you know, banks often would tell customers to, you know, follow certain safety guidelines and be alert when you're using those machines and, you know, make sure you have your card ready before you go up to one and you know, don't linger. Don't count your money as you're, until the dealing's done, I guess. But don't count your money right there at the machine. You know, don't give thieves the opportunity to pounce on you, in those cases. Now, of course, if you're in a nice busy street and there's a lot of people around, you're probably in better shape than, you know, talk about in the middle of the night after you've gone clubbing all night long and you need that cash because you're about to go to that all night, pancake house, that only accepts cash. You know, just bear in mind your surroundings and the situation and be careful. I hope you enjoyed that look back at tech stuff. And remember, if you want to get in touch with us, you can send me an email. The address is techstuff@howstuffworks.com or drop me a line on Facebook, Twitter, or Tumblr. The handle at all three is techstuff, HSW. And I'll talk to you again really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.